This morning, the sky turned herself inside out. Blue enough to stitch the seconds into minutes. Strong enough to haul us from morning to noon. The steps, slow centuries. Stumbling into a fractured but stable. Concussed but conscious now. Day by day, they said, but sometimes it is hour by hour. In a dark time, the eye begins to see, and now is not the time for limp lament or empty empathy. Silence is complicity, and so we must hear the cry of the bruised and bloody nativity. Now is not the time for guilt-appeasing charity. Each of us must become a drop in a sea change of the heart and dare to dream of a fresh, minted humanity. And though it is a brittle flower, its roots are made of steel. Beneath the rubble and the ruin it rises, defying each shrapnel-ripped ordeal. So delve deep and hold on to what's dear and sever the noose of despair. Unravel the hangman's rope. Roll dice against the odds and stockpile. Stockpile on hope.
You just listened to Lifelines, Martini by Dublin Jazzers for Gaza. Hey folks, it's your girl Amorowa, and you're listening to Radio Perg on CFRU 93.3 FM. For today's episode, I have a recording from an event held over the summer by Decolonial Solidarity and Speed River Paddling. It was a fundraiser called Paddle for Palestine. You'll be hearing from a number of speakers that will be introduced in the segment, all from different backgrounds. So, without further ado, here we go.
So, Guelph is located on the ancestral lands of the Chenantan, the Anishinaabeg, and the Haudenosaunee peoples, and the treaty lands and territories of Mississaugas of the Credit. We recognize the significance of the Dish With One Spoon Covenant to this land and offer our respect and gratitude to Indigenous peoples of Turtle Island who have stewarded and loved this land for centuries. In stating this, we acknowledge that we are here as a result of blood that has been shed through colonization, and that colonization is an ongoing process which Indigenous communities across Turtle Island continue to experience. As settlers, we need to understand that we are participants in that process. And growing up, as I was learning about residential schools, the Holocaust, Rwanda, I always wondered how colonialism, land theft, and genocides happened and were so easily accepted by the masses. Today, we are watching how it all happens in real time. We and the colonial state of Canada are currently and actively participating in the colonial projects here and abroad, whether that be across Turtle Island or in Palestine. We can't just denounce colonialism of the past and consent to it in the present. As settlers on this land, our solidarity should never be comfortable. And if and when it is, we are doing it wrong. Because decolonization is not just a theory or an abstract idea, but rather it is a material process of dismantling the states and institutions that perpetuate and uphold colonialism, capitalism, and white supremacy. I'd like to end this land acknowledgement by saying that the same way that Israel should not exist, Canada should not exist. I would also like to acknowledge that a lot of people actually don't like land acknowledgements since they're very performative with not a lot of material value. As settlers on this land, we must join the struggle for collective liberation. And today we'll be hearing from Indigenous and Palestinian speakers about the interconnected struggles for liberation from Turtle Island to Palestine. This event is hosted by Decolonial Solidarity, with support from OPERG, Water Watchers, Speed River Paddling. And Decolonial Solidarity is a network of settler and allied folks that was established in late 2021 to respond to the calls for solidarity from the Wet'suwet'en land defenders, who have been on the front line fighting to protect their land and water from the Coastal GasLink pipeline. 4 years later, after the Shut Down Canada movement and the Wet'suwet'en still continue to fight corporate interests on their unceded Indigenous lands and are currently being criminalized for it. As we listen to our speakers today, I invite you all to lean in and really listen and connect the dots between liberation struggles. And with that, I would like to introduce our very first speaker, who is the wonderful Quill. Quill is an Anishinaabe educator and self-taught visual artist. She is the creator of the Indigenous Youth Residency Program, an artist residency for Indigenous youth that engages land-based creative practices through Anishinaabe artistic methodologies. She holds a master's degree in Indigenous governance on Anishinaabe art making as a process of falling in love. Her written work can be found in Guts Magazine and T.N. Bannock, and her visual work can be found at Raunchy Kiwi. I really want y'all to pull out your phones after this and follow Quill on Instagram. Her artwork is beautiful. And you know, just her analysis on everything that's happening is so, so powerful. So I do encourage you to check her out after she speaks. So, Quill.
Hello, everybody. My name is Quill Christie Peters. I'm Anishinaabe from Treaty 3 territory in northwestern Ontario, and I'm also Scottish and Irish on my mother's side. I think today I just wanted to start by talking about how I felt beyond words when I was asked to do this. I was asked to talk about the parallels between, you know, Indigenous and Palestinian liberation, and I just felt so unable to put words to this moment, unlike the times that I've spoken before. It just feels so, like so many months in, everything has been said. Everything I've wanted to say has been said, and it's just kind of this weird moment where we're being asked to engage beyond words, and I think with our bodies and with the land. And I just want to acknowledge the type of day that is today and just the humbling cold air and the wind and the looming thunder, the thunderbirds yesterday, in kind of how I open this up. This is also the first time I haven't come with a plan of what I want to say, because I felt so beyond words. So I'm just going to speak from the heart and still always find words. So I'm Anishinaabeg from Treaty 3. It's kind of far away from here. It's near Thunder Bay. How we grapple with settler colonialism is different than how Palestinians grapple with settler colonialism. Some kind of things that weigh heavily on me or that shape my experience of colonialism. My father went to residential school. My homelands were flooded by hydroelectric dams in northwestern Ontario, making them unlivable for many generations. And just this fall, I guess in a couple months, they're trying to dump a bunch of nuclear waste right on my homelands, on my territory. So those are just, some of the main hitters of how I grapple with colonialism. And I have always been an anti-colonial thinker, and yet the escalation of events in October fundamentally changed me. And I think what that moment laid out for us was just how interconnected we are through structures of empire. Everything has been laid out so clear for us to connect the dots. The way that Canada and the US has supported Israel and vice versa. There's so much to be learned from those interconnections. And for me, it was making the jump from solidarity as something I could do to help other communities around me towards solidarity as something we choose to do every moment of every day and kind of building our worlds together, free of genocide. I think in this moment, I've been thinking a lot about sacrifice as a measure of solidarity. I don't know if anyone else feels this way, but it's been so many months of trying different tactics, and it feels a little immersive at the moment. And so I've really been thinking about how to measure our responsibilities, and I've been thinking about sacrifice a lot. And so I just wanted to offer that as a tool for everyone here. What have you sacrificed in your life, and what are you not willing to sacrifice? And I think this long into the genocide, we are being called to sacrifice more. What we have been doing and trying to do is not having material consequences in Palestine. And so we really need to sit and reflect on what we're willing to sacrifice, what we're not willing to sacrifice, and why. And that just brings me back to talking about the web of empire that we're enmeshed within. I've seen a lot of white perspectives in my circle feel like they can't possibly have an impact on what's happening in Palestine as a way to kind of step back from responsibility. But from an Anishinaabeg perspective, we build our world every single moment, every single day, every single decision, action, inaction contributes to the building of a world. And so every time we're not willing to sacrifice or we're not willing to take action, we are actively consenting to a world built on genocide again. And as an Anishinaabeg person, I just can't do that. I'm going to end by talking about something hopeful and good. I want to talk a little bit about a trip that I just came back from. Me and my friend Tiana, who is also from Treaty 3, we decided to bring a delegation of Palestinian folks to our traditional homelands and territories. And it felt monumental, and it was really beautiful. So I just want to share a little bit about that and how, I guess, from an Anishinaabeg worldview, I am putting, not my theory, but I'm putting that into relational action, and how that aligns with who I am as an Anishinaabeg person. So the trip was always, you know, going to be special. It was inviting Palestinian folks to our territory. It's a very long way away. It's like in the middle of nowhere. There's bugs. It's, you know, pretty grueling at times. And we knew it was going to be special, but then it started to kind of take on a life of its own in the ways that our communities in Treaty 3 decided to greet the Palestinian people and what they were willing to share and to give to the Palestinian people that we brought. We had some of our most cherished elders and knowledge keepers come and hold the Palestinian people in some of our most sacred ceremonies and just depth of our being. And that was really healing, because I think as an indigenous person who's, you know, been speaking up about Palestine, it can sometimes feel a little bit lonely in terms of our own communities. There's not as many people as I think there should be from indigenous communities putting themselves out there and being invested and committed. And so to see some of our old people and our medicine holders and our knowledge keepers meet us in that way, ready to gift like our most special knowledge and hold space for the grief of the people that we brought with us, was like, it felt very monumental. It felt very special. And that trip was really to take everything that we've been, you know, talking about and thinking about in terms of liberation and put it into actual intimate relationships with one another. So we got to get stuck in thunderstorms with one another. We got to do ceremony together. We got to laugh and cry. And my little Gijik, my little daughter, was there, and she just was such medicine. She just knew what people needed, and she was saying prayers at the tree for Palestine and the bears and creation. It was just really, really special and monumental. And I want to share that because the times feel so hard and crushing. But there's hope, and there's good work that's happening in good moments, and so much love. And I guess the last thing I want to share is just in our culture, we do lots of like ceremony, and there's lots of spiritual dimensions to who we are as Anishinaabeg people. And from that time together, we were able to kind of do ceremony that allowed us to understand who else is paying attention and who else is doing this work with us. I'm gonna sound like a weirdo because I'm trying to talk about ceremony without, like, you know, yeah, being too time and space or abstract, but through that delegation, we were basically able to feel the presence of some of our like most special and sacred spirits witnessing that work, and also telling us that they like are committed to the work as well and are not gonna let this happen without a fight. And so that was really affirming and validating, just to know that with all of the death and destruction and pain and genocide in Gaza, that our ancestors and spirits have told us that they're watching and witnessing and doing what they can to help as well. So even if that sounds weird, I just wanted to share that. Yeah, miigwech.
Can we get one more round of applause for Quill, those beautiful words? Awesome. So I'm going to introduce the next speaker. My name's Jordan, but just before I do, I don't know if it's still going around. We have a sign-up list for Decolonial Solidarity Guelph's newsletter. If it is going around, and if you get a chance to sign it, that's how you're going to hear about events like this again. It'll be sent to your email, so please think about signing. And if you're in Guelph, volunteering as well. There's a place to sign up if you want to sign up to volunteer. But our next speaker is Shatta Mahmood, and Shatha Mahmood is a Palestinian refugee and organizer with the Toronto chapter of the Palestinian Youth Movement. The Palestinian Youth Movement is a grassroots organization of Palestinian and Arab youth with chapters across North America and Europe, who organize in service of Palestinian liberation. As youth in the far diaspora, they affirm that Palestinians have not abandoned their struggle for freedom and liberation and their right to return to their homeland that they, their parents, and their grandparents were exiled from by force. So I just want to introduce you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I have to update that bio. We now have a network in Kitchener-Waterloo. So I should update that in the future. So, hello everyone, my name is Shada. I am an organizer with the Palestinian Youth Movement. I wanted to thank the organizers for inviting me today and allowing us to table here and for organizing this incredible event. I'm chronically online. Every time there's a discourse, I'm a part of that discourse, and I'm like, what are people saying? What's happening? The online political discourse, as much as it sucks, has a material implication into our organizing. So writing this today is kind of reflected in what has been being said online with the presidential elections coming up. And solidarity or joint struggle is something that I think is integral to our movement, and I kind of want to unpack it a little bit more. So today, as I live and breathe on colonized Turtle Island, the massacres back home have not ceased. As I speak in this very moment, in Gaza, there is a ground invasion, a complete shutdown of all major hospitals, and rapidly escalating rates of infectious disease and starvation. In the last 11 months, we have witnessed what has been the most violent assault on Palestinians since the Nakba in 1948. Over 186,000 Palestinians have been murdered by the Zionist entity. And for the past 314 days, we've been repeating these statistics with the number increasing every single time. I have family in Gaza, and it's come to a point where I can no longer count the number of family members that have been martyred. Some uncovered from under the rubble weeks after their death, some in random plastic bags filled with human remains, and others succumbing to their injuries due to the destruction of all medical infrastructure. And while we scroll through the images of charred bodies, the heads of decapitated children, and the videos of wailing mothers holding pieces of what was once their children, the depraved Zionist entity is up in arms, rioting to defend their right of the occupational forces to sexually assault Palestinian prisoners. And yet, despite this, I am undeterred. I am undeterred because I know that our liberation is guaranteed. I am undeterred because I know that we will win. And by we, I mean all of us, collectively. While this aggression against Gaza and all of Palestine continues, we know that this aggression does not occur in a vacuum. We know that our struggles are materially connected. The settler colonial Canadian entity that continues to support a genocide in Gaza against our people has enacted and continues to enact genocide, ethnic cleansing, and land dispossession against the indigenous peoples of this land. The same imperialist Zionist forces that are harming our people in Gaza and all across Palestine are harming indigenous peoples of this land. Canadian police and RCMP have training programs with the Israeli occupational forces and employ the same tactics to oppress us. The same Zionist forces that are murdering and displacing Palestinians are the funders of those that are murdering and displacing our siblings in Sudan. Israeli weaponry and arms are being used by forces in Sudan to massacre and displace Sudanese people, with over 15,000 martyred and over 10 million displaced. And those same Zionist forces are funding the genocide in Congo, sending Israeli military training to murder and displace millions of people. 6 million people have been murdered, and over 7 million people have been displaced. But we know that our people across the global south are resisting. We know that it would be impossible for us to resist the forces of imperialism through isolated movements. We believe that liberation movements fighting Western colonialism must come together to materialize our collective liberation. As Palestinians, we know all too well that these tactics are attempts to destroy our people's spirits. It's a tactic and an attempt to destroy our resistance and to crush our hopes of national liberation. But let me tell you, our spirits, our resistance, and our hope will never be broken. Because in the same way that our struggles are interlinked, so is our resistance. We chant that the people united will never be defeated, and this rings true in this moment. So it is because of our solidarity that we are unbreakable. We also must acknowledge that solidarity is not just a mere transactional relationship. It is not one that takes from the other. Instead, it emboldens our collective fight. We must remember that our solidarity is based on shared principles and shared material conditions. We share the same enemy, and we share the same goals of liberation. As the late revolutionary martyr Ghassan Kanafani said, imperialism has laid its body over the world, the head in Eastern Asia, the heart in the Middle East, its arteries reaching Africa and Latin America. Wherever you strike it, you damage it, and you serve the world revolution. We know that it took Algeria 125 years to liberate itself from the shackles of French colonial forces, and we are prepared to spend our lives, this lifetime and the next, liberating our lands. But looking at all of us here today, I know that we will be liberated from the clutches of US, Zionist, and Western forces within our lifetime. The revolutions of the past started in gatherings like this with people like us. They can keep trying to kill and uproot our people, steal our land and resources, but we will have something that they will never have. We have a struggle that is worth living for and worth dying for. We will win. None of us are free until we're all free. My liberation is yours and your liberation is mine. Glory to indigenous land defenders everywhere. Glory to our people's struggle against colonialism and imperialism. And from Turtle Island to Palestine, we will all be liberated. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. I've got a track here for you. Here's Baldhead by Thea. You're listening to Radio Berg on CFRU 93.3 FM.
I cannot breathe, please step off of my chest. Loosen the noose tightening around my neck. I wish for freedom and to sing my song. Where prison is on the fairyland we're from. Yeah.
You just listened to Baldhead by Fam. Welcome back, folks. It's your girl Amorwa, and you're listening to Radio Perg on CFRU 93.3 FM. Before we get back into the segment for Paddle for Palestine, I just have a couple of announcements. So first and foremost, Socktober has returned. So the Helper Bees program of the Church of the Apostles wants to collect 5,000 pairs of socks in October to distribute through Rachel's Saturday Table, which is a grassroots organization that's been helping distribute food to unhoused folks in the downtown Guelph area. They're really great. I hope to do an interview with them soon. But if you haven't heard, please try and get involved. They're amazing. The Helper Bees are collecting socks through community partners and are looking for any and all socks, including gently used socks, children's socks, and dress socks. Donations can be made at the locations that I'm about to mention, but if you want to know more about Socktober, you can contact the Helper Bees at helperbees@apostleguelph.org. So there's several donation boxes. There's one at the Guelph Tool Library. There's one at the constituency office of Mike Schreiner on Woolwich Street. There's one at the Guelph Collegiate Vocational Institute on Paisley. The River of Life International Fellowship Church on Margaret Street. All Saints Lutheran and Anglican Church on Silver Creek. Church of the Apostles, of course, on Glasgow. And there is one at the Oprah Guelph office here on Trent Lane. So if you have socks and you need to get rid of them, I know it's getting cold, but if you have some spare ones that you no longer need, please consider donating them to Socktober. Like I said, they are looking for 5,000 pairs. So yeah, hopefully people can do that. All right, and let's get back into the show.
I will now introduce our next speaker. Our next speaker is Abdullah, a student at the University of Guelph who has held leadership roles like the Vice President of External Affairs at the Muslim Students Association on campus, where he led major fundraising efforts for various international causes, primarily Palestine and Gaza focused. He also interned with the Canadian Arabic Orchestra, a Mississauga arts organization, seeing firsthand how Arab communities in the diaspora interact with art.
Can everybody hear me okay? Hello, everyone. How's everybody doing? This is such a cool little gathering that we have going on today. I'm very excited just to go around and talk to people. But we gather today for a much more pressing reason. A little bit of tiny bit of history that I want to go over that is going to inform much of what we understand of the present. Globally, colonizers have always sought to justify their occupation by reshaping history and masking their violence with a veneer of civilization and progress. Between Palestine or Turtle Island may be struggles that are separated by geography, but they're deeply connected through a shared understanding of displacement, of resistance, and colonialism. And it is this last point that I want to focus on. With the rising popularity of veganism and the rapid acceptance of LGBT rights in the West, Israel has tried to position itself as a bastion of gay rights, and the only one at that in the region. And they also call themselves the vegan capital of the world. Mind you, gay marriage is illegal in Israel, but they somehow win the political points for that nonetheless. What does this really mean, though? Why do I mention this to you? It is supposed to make Israel out to be a model, a paragon of social causes and activism, which are things that tend to be very popular among young people. They'll become so distracted by how good Israel is that you forget that it is built on the brutal dispossession of Palestinians. It makes Israel look more civilized than its neighbors. And it is also just a modern adaptation of a long, long history of colonizers going on a mission to civilize. Another fact in reality is indigenous rights and indigenous issues have also gained a lot of currency worldwide. In 2007, the UN passes its Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. While this may be good, there is no shortage of dishonest attempts to appropriate indigenous struggles for propaganda. Israel's most persistent propaganda is to portray the Jewish population as indigenous to the land, and that Israel was not actually a state formed by migrants who had no connection to Palestine, and they just moved there en masse, ethnically cleansing everybody who was there beforehand. No. They are retaking what is rightfully theirs. In fact, what's even more comical than that is you may even hear that the Zionist project is one of decolonization. There are dozens of articles around this and a strong social media campaign to support it. They appropriate the terminology of indigenous liberation to frame Israelis not as recent arrivals, but ancient people from the Kingdom of Judea who have simply returned to their ancestral homeland to decolonize it. The Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs says Israel joins the world today in marking the International Day of Indigenous Peoples. On this day, we are proud to recall the ancient Jewish connection to the land of Israel, unbroken for 3,000 years. Considering we're gathered today to speak of indigeneity, I wanted to shed light on this ludicrous narrative. The most immediate problem we face is, back in the day, colonialism was not a bad word. In fact, Europeans were very enthusiastic and they espoused colonialism as a good thing. So the supporters of Zionism in the 20th century did not mince words. Theodor Herzl is often called the father of Zionism. In his pamphlet in 1896 called The Jewish State, he outlines this plan to colonize Palestine. He says, quote, "It would be carried out in the long-established English manner." What is the English manner, you may ask? It is Britain's age-old method to colonize through the forming of corporations that execute what the pamphlet is saying, colonial tasks. And the names of these organizations is just a dead giveaway of their intention. One is called the Jewish Colonial Trust. Another is called the Jewish Colonization Association. Does this sound like an indigenous struggle? I'll do you one better. Vladimir Jabotinsky came after Theodor Herzl and was the founder of the Irgun. It was a Jewish terrorist organization that later became, it was the precursor to the IDF and later became that, along with the Haganah and other organizations. He made it very clear in his book, The Iron Wall. He says, quote, "It is utterly impossible to obtain the voluntary consent of the Palestine Arabs for converting Palestine from an Arab country into a country with a Jewish majority." He goes on to say, "Zionism is a colonizing adventure, and therefore it stands or falls by the question of armed force." That is not me saying this. That is not Bassem Youssef or Abu Ubaidah saying this. These are the founders of the Zionist movement. In short, Zionists not only called it colonialism constantly, but they identified themselves with other colonialists of the day. They used the same language and the same arguments. Only now that colonialism is a bad word and indigenization is a good one, their propaganda machine has started to work extra hard. And this is what we face. This is what we face for the struggle for true indigenization, for the liberation of the real and legitimate indigenous people of the land, be it in Palestine or Turtle Island. What does it mean to be indigenous is the question I ask you today. It doesn't just mean I originate from this place, which is why no one says, who's 100% Dutch, for example, no one calls that person indigenous, no one ever says that. Instead, indigenous as a term is used a little bit differently. It is a term that is imposed on us. It is a term that is imposed on a social group through colonialism. Indigenous peoples are those whose societies have been upended as a result of colonialism. That also happens to be the UN definition of the word. And the entire reason why I mention all this is it is inevitable for you that you engage with others around these conversations. And it is about time we stop playing defense. We need to arm ourselves with the tools that will make our movement successful. And a lot of that starts with knowledge. So if I provoked a thought or two in you today, then I have accomplished my goal and I encourage you to continue learning. As we reflect on these connected struggles, it is essential to remember that the liberation of one community is bound to the liberation of all. These systems of oppression have sought to divide us through borders, walls,
and violence. But these things have only made our solidarity stronger. In both indigenous and Palestinian communities, the fight for land is not just about physical territory. It's about reclaiming dignity in culture. It's about reconnecting with those things that colonialism has tried to sever from us and take: our relationship to the land, our histories, and each other. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Abdullah. It's an honor to be here and to be able to introduce the next speaker tonight. I'm Jenny, also from Decolonial Solidarity Guelph, and I get to introduce Maiar, who is a Palestinian living in Guelph and is currently pursuing a graduate degree in history. Her research focuses on the interconnected systems of solidarity between indigenous peoples on Turtle Island and in Palestine, rooted in a deep commitment to create a better world. Please welcome Maiar. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you all for being here today. Every time I have the privilege of being trusted to speak about Palestine, I like to start by reminding everybody here that as a Palestinian whose family is from Khan Yunis and Gaza, I'm incredibly privileged to be alive and present in this space here. Today, I stand here and I speak to you all. And it is important to remind myself that I very much could have been shredded to pieces by the state of Israel if I were in Gaza. Some of you paddled before coming here today, which urges me to talk about the impact of the occupation of Israel on access to water for Palestinians living in Gaza. So the issue of unsafe drinking water and access to water in general for Gazans is not a new issue. Before October 7, 26% of diseases in Gaza were water-related, which was a direct result of having to rely on contaminated water. The 2014 war on Gaza caused $34 million in damage to Gaza's water and sanitation services. And then again in May 2021, 290 water infrastructure objects were damaged by the State of Israel in Gaza. At the same time, the denial of humanitarian access and the blockade on Gaza by Israel significantly slowed repairs and the restoration of water services. Then again in 2022, with the destruction incompletely repaired, severe storms led to flash flooding, worsened by damaged pipes and stormwater drain clogged with untreated waste. Since the end of last year, there has been a great shortage of food, fuel, medicine, and water in Gaza. The horrible conditions have only been getting worse in the past few months. A bit over a month ago, Gaza's Ministry of Health and the World Health Organization conducted testing of the water. As a result, polio was detected in the sewage water, which threatens another layer of a health disaster in Khan Yunis and Deir el-Balah. Polio has made a comeback in Gaza for the first time in 25 years, with the first identified polio case being a 10-month-old Palestinian baby. Viruses like polio thrive in environments such as Gaza, a place where sanitation is lacking as a result of an ongoing genocide. Now, here today, it's important to remind ourselves on this land that the struggle for liberation between indigenous peoples on Turtle Island and in Palestine are interconnected and incomplete without the liberation of each other. We're fighting the same violent systems that attempt to destroy us, but indigenous peoples everywhere have proven that the colonizer will never destroy our spirits, and we will continue to resist until we free our people, lands, and waters. I encourage everybody here to join organizations that consistently put in the work to support the liberation of Palestine. We should not think of ourselves just in solidarity with Palestinians. We have to put in the work to think of ourselves as part of the liberation movement. We can only defeat the violence of colonialism if we're intentional and strategic with our time and resources. Any action in support of Palestine is important, but it's more important that we're united and centered on the actions that we are doing. Support and join activists in any way you can, especially those who directly disrupt the flow of resources to Israel. Without the flow of resources to Israel, this genocide will not be possible. As indigenous and non-indigenous peoples living on this land, we have to reflect on our role here, and we have to oppose the ways in which this colonial state supports this genocide and ensure that we are doing actions directly to stop the harm that is happening. We have power in our numbers, and I'm very grateful for the people that are here today. Be loud, be annoying, there's a genocide happening, and we have to do everything we can to stop it. And I hope I get to see you all in a free Palestine one day.
Thanks so much, Maya, for your words, Meyer. I just wanted to acknowledge, first of all, before closing, another speaker who wanted to be here tonight, intended to be here, and wasn't able to be here. So Carol is a Mohawk from the Wolf Clan from Six Nations of the Grand River Territory. She is the climate leadership lead at the Indigenous Climate Action and a volunteer with Protect the Tract, a Haudenosaunee-led project dedicated to exercising Indigenous sovereignty through the promotion of land stewardship over the Haldimand Tract. In 2018, Carol attended a political delegation to occupied Palestine with an organization called Indigenous Land Defense Across Borders, dedicated to building solidarity between Indigenous peoples on Turtle Island and Palestinians under occupation. So we thank Carol for her intention to be here, even though she was not able to attend tonight. So we're just wrapping up now with the formal part of our night, our speakers, and we'll move to connecting, gathering over food, and building solidarity with Indigenous nations and Palestine through our connections and future actions. So I just want to really thank everybody for your attendance here tonight, for your ongoing commitment to standing up against genocide and colonization. Thank you for bringing the food to gather around. I really believe that that is powerful, and thank you for bringing your hearts and your actions. Thank you for your contributions to support the charity El Elna Elak. As we've heard, this charity urgently needs your help to support the people in Palestine right now, and of course so much more needs to be done to stop the genocide. We want to thank Greg and Speed River Paddling for partnering with us, for donating your kayaks and canoes and the water time. We love you and appreciate you so that we could hold this event. And if you didn't get to paddle tonight, we hope that you might enjoy a paddle later in the summer and support them. Thank you to OPERG and Water Watchers for partnering with us and helping us to run this event. We couldn't have done it without your support. I want to say such a deep, heartfelt thank you to the speakers, Quill, Shada, Abdullah, Meyer, for your time, your words, and important messages. As I was writing the thank you, I wasn't sure what to write because I hadn't heard the words yet, and it is hard to even put into words the depth of gratitude for what you're doing, for what you're bringing here, for your wisdom, for your compassion and heart and leadership inspiring us. I'm deeply grateful. And thank you to Carol also for your work and intention to be part of this event, and we wish you well from afar. We hope that this will be a time tonight to make connections, to gather around, building solidarity for Palestine. Please consider sharing pictures of the event with others so they may offer their financial support. Stay tuned to our Decolonial Solidarity Instagram account, where we will post the money we raised tonight. And please to continue to follow us on Instagram as we have future events planned and actions that you can take to challenge colonialism from Turtle Island to Palestine. Glad we're all in this together. Thank you all. Thank you. So please enjoy the food and gather together.
And thank you so much for listening. It really was a great event to attend. There was so much food, so much laughter, and so much like beautiful connection that took place. I really hope that when an event like this happens again, folks will be able to participate. It really was an awesome time. I believe they ended up raising about $800 too. So not bad for a little paddle and potluck, you know? But before I go, I do have a couple of announcements for you. So Decolonial Solidarity is back at it again with another fundraiser happening next week, October 17th. So join them at 5:30 p.m. at Silence, which is 46 Essex Street, for the screening of Yinta. The event itself is pay what you can at the door, and all funds will be donated to the Wet'suwet'en Yinta Defense Legal Fund. So Yinta, meaning land in the Wet'suwet'en language, tells the story of an indigenous nation asserting sovereignty. It is the story of the Wet'suwet'en people reoccupying their territory and resisting the construction of multiple pipelines. So Decolonial Solidarity Guelph has been on the show multiple times talking about it, so definitely check out our archives if you want to learn more about the issue. But the film itself follows Frida Hudson and Slato Molly Wickham, along with the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs and fellow land defenders, as they reoccupy and protect their traditional land in a decade-long battle to keep out the companies that seek to exploit it. I watched the trailer. It looks incredible. And I'm really, really hoping to go and just like really learn from the perspective of the land defenders. I believe they also have a speaker who will be participating after to kind of do a debrief and kind of talk about the film and like what their experiences were. I really hope that folks can make it out. Like I said, it is Thursday, October 17th, 5:30 p.m. at Silence. The event is pay what you can at the door. So yeah, let's fill up the space, because it's a really, really, it should be an amazing film. I believe it was 10 years in the making as well. So I hope people can go and experience that. So yeah, hope to see folks there. And also coming up this month is our third installment of Conflict Skills for Activists. Organizing is hard enough, and it's inevitable that you will be organizing spaces where conflict will arise. It's a perfectly normal thing to experience, but not everyone has the tools to deal with it. So that's where my friend and facilitator Amelia comes in. So join us on Monday, October 21st from 5 to 7 p.m. in the University Center, 4th floor, room 442, for an experiential workshop to gain skills and understanding about navigating conflict in activist spaces. The third session will be focusing on perfectionism, social punishment, and abolition. Let's have a conversation about cancel culture and what that looks like when you're organizing, because sometimes people say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing, have different opinions than you, and it becomes a really, really big deal in these spaces when you're working together. So it's honestly really, really important for us to kind of understand those differences, how it arises, and what you can do around that. Because I've been reading some really interesting material lately, and it's something that's kind of come up in organizing spaces that I've been part of recently and not so recently. So I'm very excited for this final bit. The last two were also really, really great. We dug into conflict and trauma and how it shows up in our bodies and shows up in our spaces and how it comes to conflict. And then we also just talked about boundaries, what they mean, what they look like, and how people can kind of understand and work through their discomfort when conflict does arise, because I know a lot of people's tendencies is to avoid it. So yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to this conversation, and I hope that people can attend. The event is completely free, and all students, staff, faculty, and community members are welcome. So yeah, please join us Monday, October 21st from 5 to 7 p.m. in UC 442. And before I go, I have one final track here for you. My buddy Hareen told me about this artist, and I have come to love them. Originally, the song that I wanted to play was Get the F Off the Inta, but I couldn't make a clean version in time. So here's No Canada by Lee Reed. You were listening to Radio Perg on CFRU 93.3 FM. This is your girl Amorawa signing off. Remember to take care of yourselves, folks, and I'll see you next week.
The Government of Canada sincerely apologizes and asks the forgiveness of the Aboriginal peoples of this country for failing them so profoundly.
This is stolen land where you've been standing, understand it. Switch it from stitching bandage to substantive with derangement of some things. Reparation made for corporate gain. First Nation pain's a moral stain. We hide genocide on reservations. Too many pages of our histories erased to mitigate the national shame of it. Built by slave black labor, hobble and arrogant racist. John A. McDonald, $10 notes is check the quotes. Genocide personified, exposed. Colonial go both coasts. And they got railway posts for the Chinese ghosts. Mine for diamond, nickel and gold. Total control of petrol flow. Ayo, no Canada. We want none of that. Bogus, broken corporate management. Jingle, patriot, fascist. Petro-national carbon capital, man. Do you understand where you stand? Global capital of resource extraction, fracking, mining, and conflict diamond. The gold, silver's the other mineral fine, cause we hide the villainous minds behind it. We hide the ties of culpability binding to ecocide they leave behind them. Our law facilitates the rape of the lands, the lakes, and the forests that we take from shore, offshore, Earth's core. Suck the source while cops enforce it. The true north is a fortress for the corporate. Out of war forfeit for the profits, it's subsidized, colonizer force. Police report the mixed stock price soar. This is war like it was before. Mama Earth versus the company store. Ayo, no Canada, we want none of that. Bogus, broken corporate management. Jingle, patriot, fascist. Petro-national carbon capital, man. Do you understand where you stand?